We present The Motion Show, Radio 4's answer to serious debating, with your chairman, Dr. Phil Hammond.
Thank you, thank you. Hello and welcome to the show that's been likened to competitive mud wrestling, but without the mud. Or the wrestling. Indeed, we just argue for points. On my left, the sharp vocal talents of Maria McCurlan and John O'Farrell.
Hello.
And opposing them on my right, the equally acerbic Mark Mayer and Miles Kington.
Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, the speakers. For the next 30 minutes, we're going to engage in a series of fascinating but essentially useless debates. After each one, the House votes on a winner and the losers sulk. So, let's get on with it. Here's the first motion. This House believes that the class system should be abolished. Mr. John O'Farrell, please would you approach the lectern and propose the motion. This House believes that the class system should be abolished.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, they say that when someone from England opens their mouth, you can immediately tell what class they are. And that when an American opens their mouth, you can tell they're a White House intern. Basically, class in England is still divided along the lines of the Normans and the Saxons. The Normans all still go hunting and drink wine and own land in France, and the Saxons drink ale, use Anglo-Saxon vocabulary, and 10 small strips of land behind the railway lines. I have to admit, I'm hopelessly middle class. I go into hardware shops and say things like, I want one of those thingamajigs, like a sort of hook that you screw into a shelf. Cup hooks. Yes. How much are they? Well, they're £100. Oh, are they? Oh, right. Well, I better only have a dozen of those then. You see, if there's no class, I wouldn't have to go through all that. And imagine how wonderful Britain would be without class. If all the classes were jumbled up, you'd have drive-by pheasant shooting. And Britain's ambassador to the UN would be Kevin from Quick Fit. So, you know, everyone would talk with accents that would sort of veer wildly from middle class to upper class or to working class. We'd all talk like Ben Elton, really. The main reason we should abolish class is that just to get rid of all those posh twits who don't say thank you when you let them out at traffic junctions. The upper classes get everything, don't they? They get the nice houses, huge salaries. And when anything goes a bit wrong for the upper classes, you know, they just can't understand it, can they? It's like all those Lloyd's names. They took a risk. They lost their money. That's how it works. They think, but that's not fair. It's like, you don't get a bloke from the pub go back into the bookies going, well, my horse lost. Can I have my money back? Now, if we had a genuine meritocracy in this country, there would be no office jobs for people who are posh and stupid. Estate agents would never be the same. But people say, look what happened in Stalin's Russia. He tried to eradicate class. If we tried to eradicate class here, all that would happen is that thousands of public school boys who earn thousands of pounds a week would be forced out of their Porsches and made to work in brutal slave camps. And they say that as if it's a bad thing. So I urge you to support the motion. Throw off your class. You have nothing to lose but your mange too. Thank you.
Thank you very much. What a persuasive argument. But let's hear what the opposition has to say. Mr. Miles Kington, would you please step forward and oppose the motion?
Mr. Chairman, lords, ladies and gentlemen, Britain is the only country in the world where a man can get up in public and say, lords, ladies and gentlemen, without people saying, what's he on about? We actually love our lords. We love our class system. We couldn't operate without it. I'll give you an example. A married couple I know went to live in Edinburgh recently. And in Edinburgh, they found the middle class system is you judge people by what school your children go to. And people kept saying to us, oh, so what school are your children going to? And they said, we have no children. And everyone said, if you had children, what school would they go to? I'll give you another example. A friend of mine went to interview Dame Barbara Cartland once, our greatest living writer. And he said to her, as he stood respectfully behind her chair, do you think we really live in a classless society now, Dame Barbara? And she said, well, of course we do, because if we didn't, people like you wouldn't have a chance to talk to people like me, would they? Governments today are always trying to discredit the House of Lords. Labour is trying to discredit by banning all hereditary peers. The Tory government, they were worse, they tried to discredit the House of Lords by giving Geoffrey Archer a peerage. But it'll take much more than that to remove our respect for our betters. Only today, as I came to the BBC, my taxi driver said to me, where to, Squire? Squire. I said to him, how did you instinctively know that I own 40,000 acres of rolling parkland in Wiltshire? And he said, don't mess me about, Gov, where to? That man had the gift of moving effortlessly up and down the class system. Where would we be without it? I remember the time that I was called for jury duty, and as the 12 of us filed into the jury room, I realised I was the only person present with a jacket and tie on. And somebody once told me it's always the middle-class member of a jury who's made the chairman, so I dashed into the lavatory to remove my jacket and tie. I came back, and somebody said to me, got news for you, mate. You've been elected chairman of the jury. I said, now, why was it? Was that because of my jacket and tie, or was it because you took advantage of my absence in the lavatory? He said, no, it's because you called it a lavatory, not a toilet. So, ladies and gentlemen, be honest. You couldn't operate without the class system. I know I couldn't. I have spent my whole life being looked down on by those above me and being openly despised by those beneath me, and it's made me the man I am today. So I beg to oppose the motion. If you all know your proper place, you will too. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Another very potent presentation there. Thank you, Mr. Kington. Before I ask our audience here to vote, I'm going to give our speakers one last chance to try and swing it their way. John, could you live without Alf Garnett, Hyacinth Bouquet? Could you live without those creations?
Well, these are repeats that I would enjoy endlessly on UK Gold. But for our current television, I would look forward to an EastEnders where the omnibus edition on Sunday featured a completely empty Albert Square because everyone had gone off to the country for the weekend.
Moving on, Mark. You want to retain the class society. Why is that?
Well, it's just this vision of Buckingham Palace being pebble-dashed. The Queen in a shell suit. That's it. And just this idea of anyone sort of having access to the opera. You know, Pavarotti's there on stage. You get 3,000 footballers, going, who at all the pies? Who at all the pies?
He's fat, he's round, he's worth £1 million.
Exactly. See, our position is agreeing with us now.
Imagine the Queen's Christmas message. It would be so much more entertaining to say, this Christmas I've had Philip's parents to stay and they're driving me up the bloody wall.
Thank you, fine. So let's see what our audience had to say. Now, I like this one. If you distribute any random population around a characteristic, you always end up with a Gaussian curve with 5% of the people lying outside 2 standard deviations from the mean. Ergo, class differences will always exist. And that's Ralph Pike, author of Statistics Made Simple. Fine, so I hope that's cleared up for you. Time for the vote. Members of the House, all those who agree with John that the class system should be abolished, say aye.
Aye!
All those who agree with Miles that they want to tell their toss from their commoners, say nay.
Nay!
And the ayes have it. The winners are John O'Farrell and Maria McCurlin. Swiftly on with the next motion. This House would rather read Will Carling's diary than Glenn Hoddle's. Mr. Mark Mayer, would you please propose the motion? This House would rather read Will Carling's diary than Glenn Hoddle's.
Yes, and let me start by saying that I cannot wholeheartedly condone the act of reading other people's diaries. This follows an incident involving an ex-girlfriend of mine, her diary, and a carving knife. Thank you, it still hurts. Having said that, however, and being presented with the option of reading Glenn Hoddle's as opposed to Will Carling's diary, there can be no contest, really. To put it simply, born again versus porn again. The fact is, the British have always had a real hunger for scandal, gossip and intrigue. Will Carling's diary would satisfy that hunger. He'd probably have his own form of rugby secret code. Got into scrum with hooker. Caught with fly half, mast. Tackled a bimbo. And let's not confuse the issue here. This motion is not about whether or not we approve of Will Carling's behaviour. It is, given the choice, would his diary make a better read than Glenn, who needs to practice penalties anyway, Hoddle? The various facts. You wanted me to get to the point of what would we read in Will Carling's diary. We'll discover why he called the rugby union boring old farts, which is sort of ironic coming from a man known as Bumface. His diary would reveal the facts behind his friendship with Diana and if it really caused the breakup of his marriage. Saturday afternoon, won at rugby, invited into royal box, Julia furious. And we discover why he left Ali Cocaine for Lisa Cook. In the diary it would read, Wednesday 3 p.m, sympathies with Blue Peter presenter, also with cocaine problem. Given the choice, we would far rather read the incredible intrigues and sleazy scandals of Mr. Will 69 Caps Carling than the pathetic backstabbing whinges of Mr. Glenn Kumbaya, my Lord Hoddle. If you were stuck on a desert island, ladies and gentlemen, what would you rather read, Razzle or the Bible? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mark Mann. Certainly one or two intriguing insights there. John O'Farrell, what have you got to say in opposition to the motion this House would rather read Will Carling's diary than Glenn Hoddle's?
Well, I think we can all agree they would be very different documents. One would teach you how to score, and the other would be all about football. Glenn Hoddle's diary would be honest and reflective, wouldn't they? They'd be sort of...
Well, obviously, I was quite pleased with the way the day worked out. Some things went the way I'd hoped, and some things didn't, but... At the end of the day, it's bedtime, and obviously that's the best we can hope for. No, I think I'd much rather read Glenn Hoddle's diaries, because that way we'd learn all about his plans to make England a great team. Because let's face it, we're not going to find out what these are on the football pitch. Do we really want to read the innermost thoughts of a rugby player? Now, the main reason that we don't want to read Will Carling's diaries is that he is a serial dumper. In fact, we've read his diaries. It's called The News of the World. Now, if you vote for Will Carling, you're voting for rugby rather than football. You're voting for public school cad rather than self-made man. You're voting for a man who dumps his girlfriends. I urge you to oppose the motion. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. John O'Farrell. Two extraordinarily strong arguments there. Let's open it up to the speakers. Miles.
Will Carling is altogether a more attractive character. He's honest. He says what he's doing. I'm about to leave this woman. I'm now leaving this woman. I'm going away with this woman. Glenn Hoddle is very deceptive.
Wouldn't you want to hear about, you know, what it was like when he told Gazza that he was going to not take him to France 98? Apparently he put on a track by Kenny G, didn't he, on the radio to soften the atmosphere.
But we're not talking... Well, see, we're getting off the point here, because I think we're not talking about the morals of the people. We're talking about what would make a more interesting read, and I just think... Glenn's drivel is not as exciting as Will's sleaze.
No, Will's got more to reveal.
And he has revealed it many times.
What about this faith-healing business? Does that fascinate you, Maria?
I think it's quite interesting. I mean, not really knowing very much about sport, as you would understand. No. I don't really know who either of them are, obviously.
would you like to read about one man's relationship with a woman who has harmonious paraphysical healing energy?
Yes.
That's what you want to read that.
No, what I was going to say was that I have actually read all of this in those horrible down-market papers that come through my letterbox every Sunday.
Right.
I once saw an ad in a paper I wanted to write up. It said, absent healing anywhere. But there was no address.
Do you think Will Carling would use a healer? Would he be that, have much depth?
No, he'd just seduce her.
Fine, well, let's see what our audience had to say. Here's one from Michelle from East Dulwich. I don't want to read Will Carling's diary in case it spoils the film.
Ooh.
Oh, did he or didn't he, yes.
What's the film, Free Willy 2?
Here's one from Nev the Rev. Which version of Hoddle's diary do you want to read? Is it the Old or the New Testament? Thank you. Members of the House, it's time to make your choice. All those who agree with Mark and want to know the secrets of Will Carling's diary, say aye.
Aye.
If those of you who agree with Johnny want the truth about Glenn Hoddle, say nay.
Nay.
And a win for Miles Kington and Mark Meyer. Swiftly on to the next motion. This House believes that couples should be forced to split after 7 years. Ms. Maria McCurlain, I can see you're eager to impress with your rhetorical prowess. Please propose the motion. This House believes that couples should be forced to split after 7 years.
I'd like to say also that this is nothing personal, Steve. It is my belief, Mr. Chairman, that the notion of spending the rest of your life with one partner is quite simply ludicrous. For most of our youth, we maintain an eclectic mix of friends and acquaintances who supply humour, compassion, intellectual challenge, sensitivity, sex, deviation, sexual deviation, whatever. Then, on a sociological whim and the promise of a nice frock or a sit-down four-course lunch at a Harvester Inn, we do the marrying thing and opt for a jobbed lot of disappointment when we realise that one unsuspecting and ill-prepared individual can eventually start to bore you rigid. With one relationship in three collapsing, isn't it time to wake up and smell the rotting roses? Three times married John Cleese has spent 7 years with each respective wife and claims this to be the optimum time limit for any intimate personal relationship. Now, I fully agree with him and truly believe that the seven-year itch is a biological reality. Because the first 2 years of a relationship are usually fine and passion-filled. Then we move on to the sort of in-love but comfortable kind of thing, you know, finding farting amusing. This is followed by a do we have to visit your hideous parents again and sulking in IKEA period. finishing with the period which is weekdays full of longing and weekends full of DIY period. I mean, after a while, you just get fed up. Speaking personally, Steve, after a while, you get fed up cleaning the toe clippings out of the bath, having your head buried under the duvet and fantasizing about someone else when you're having sex. It's human nature to get bored. We all lust after fresh flesh and stimulating conversation. I mean, marriage guidance counselors are forever banging on about the need for couples to talk to each other. But what if we've got nothing left to say? What I hear you cry about those happy individuals who actually want to stay together forever and ever, amen. Boo-hoo. Well, tough. At least it would mean that they valued each other for that time that they were allotted, and they may well bring real romance back into fashion. Not. Especially if they've only got 6 months left together, then you're not going to waste it, are you? Because I believe many people in the house would support my motion, as it would allow them to be guilt-free about wanting to tussle with their secretaries or gynecologists. I'm generalizing there, obviously. All I'm proposing is that we stop beating ourselves up about failing in relationships and move on happily. Also, it would put an end to all those messy arguments over who keeps the bamboo steamer, the Park and All recliner, the wok and the Black & Decker workbench, because you wouldn't buy them in the first place. I also propose, and I know this is slightly contentious, that children should be hired and not owned. Because the realization that you have elected to produce children with someone you now despise can be an unpleasant and distressing Kafkaesque moment. Therefore, if we rent children from a cloning agency, you have the benefit of a child in your next relationship being exactly like the one in your last. So I believe that everyone in the house tonight would be happier, healthier, and sexier individuals with a 7-year ruling hurrah.
Thank you very much. Well, you certainly rang a few bells there, didn't you, Maria? Mm. Moving on. Mark Mayer, would you now please stand up and take the lectern to oppose the motion that this house believes every couple should split up after 7 years?
To start, but you mentioned the 7-year itch, which leads to people splitting up. I believe that's a nonsense. It's a myth. There's no such thing as a 7-year itch. I had a 7-day rash once, which caused a few problems. Being forced to split up after 7 years is ridiculous. You've been together for 7 years. You're blissfully happy. You're lying in bed. It's your last night together. 12:01, the door's kicked open. There's the relationship police.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh. We were just saying goodbye. Leave us alone.
The marriage vows would have to be rewritten, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health, till death do you part, open brackets, or after 7 years, whichever comes first, close brackets. And what about the marriages we hold in high esteem, the ones that supposedly set an example to us all? Like the Queen's. Her 7th-year Christmas Day speech is going to be a bit tragic. There she'd be, in a shell suit.
This has not been an easy year for me. Suffice it to say, one is on the pull again. Please send a photograph of yourself in a self-addressed envelope to the Queen, Buckingham Palace.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, point of order, Mr. Chairman.
I'd say if royal marriage lasted 7 years, it would be breaking records.
Yes, yes. Interesting point there, but I'm going to uphold that point of information. Thank you. Would you like to carry on?
I certainly would.
Thank you.
All those poor people who believe in the sanctity of marriage but are forced to split up, it's going to be a tragedy. I mean, they'll be married every 7 years. Old people going, well, we've been married 35 years, you know. No, not to each other, obviously. Grannies prodding you at bus stops going, I've been married 9 times now. I've got 109 grandchildren. Do you want to see some photographs? I'm 83, you know. What about the whole act of actually splitting up? It's going to be a nightmare, especially if you're a man and you're the one that's been dumped and hasn't even lasted the full 7 years. You can't admit that to your blokey mates. You'd be pleading with your partner, just give it another 6.5 years, please, I can't stand the humility. Forced to tell your mates, no, it was mutual, it was mutual. But I heard she thought you were a complete waste of space. Yes, but I agreed, it was mutual. Thus concludeth my opposition.
Thank you very much, Mark. John, do you honestly think you're in any fit position after 7 years to play the dating game again? You're looking pretty seedy and disgusting now. Could you get out there and date?
Well, I'm in full support of Maria on this motion, and I have to say, Maria, I really don't think Steve understands you at all. No, I think it does get a bit desperate after a few years. I've got a copy of that new video, Lover's Guide 17, where the couple go to bed together, read for a bit, and then put the light out. And that's how sad it gets. And
do you not feel you can inject some passion into an existing relationship?
Well, you're the doctor.
No, I'm asking you, in your own experience, Maria, is it really that bad?
No.
You cannot?
I think it's very hard, actually, once you've kind of seen someone in egg-stained dressing gowns and...
Right, egg-stained.
Yeah.
Yes. Fine, opposition. Mr. Kingdon, how long have you been with your wife now?
Ah, oh, you see, that little cough gives it all away, doesn't it?
Which one? My first wife I was with for 17 years. 17
right.
Years, man and boy.
How do you keep a relationship alive for more than 7 years? Is it possible?
You adopt children.
Right.
Preferably 17-year-old children. Because then they're ready to go out in the world immediately. And there's no trouble at all.
Where do you get a 17? They keep her in a test tube for the first 17 years.
No, what worries me here about the opposition's argument is the supposition that relationships will go as long as 7 years and be ready to split up. I mean, if you look at Will Carney, if you forced him to go through 7 years of each of his relationships, he wouldn't have much of a diary, would he?
Fair enough. Now, great. Thank you for those insights. Here are some audience comments. This is Jack in Plymouth. This 7 years, are we talking human or dog? And she probably could have phrased that better, couldn't you, Jack? Here's one from Piers.
No, it was actually from Jack Russell, apparently.
Here's one from Piers in Chelsea. I try to keep my love life alive by dressing my wife in fishnets and sending her down to the local pub with 20 Woodbines and half a bottle of vodka. Trouble is, when I got there, she'd already been picked up, and I haven't seen her since. Sad old Piers. Right, time once again for the House to speak. All those who agree with Maria's 7-year stay, say aye.
Aye!
And all those who want to grow older together, say nay.
Nay!
That was almost a draw, but I'm going to award it to John O'Farrell and Maria McCurlane. It's time for the real excitement of the show now, when we're going to spring a mystery debate on our speakers. Even I didn't know what this is going to be, so it's time once again to say, roll the tombola, please, Lulu. And please take out one of the envelopes at random. Thank you, darling. First one for Miles. This House believes that men should be more like women.
Mr. Chairman, I have personal experience with this because I am in a mixed marriage. I'm a man and she's a woman. And I've studied her at close quarters and she's often much more sensible than I am. And I listen to what she has to say and often I do what she says and it works out really well. And I think if I was more like a woman, I should cut out the middle person and I should then just talk to myself. If I was more like a woman, I'd say, well, Miles, what would you do? And I'd tell myself what I would do. I wouldn't have to go to the wife.
Fine, thank you very much. That's good. To oppose the mystery motion, this House believes that men should be more like women. I call on John O'Farrell to take the lectern.
Well, this motion makes about as much sense as the instructions to an IKEA kitchen unit. It's something that's already happening, obviously. Male nurses, house husbands, Dale Winton. But imagine cricket if men were more like women. You'd have Angus Fraser bowling underarm. And do we really want...
Point of order.
Yes, point of order.
Blatantly, as represented by our members of the audience, sexist comment there.
I can answer that question very easily with the old Tibetan proverb.
No, I want you actually to make an apology to the women's MCC cricket team. If such a thing exists.
Haven't been allowed in this evening, have they? I was just going to say, do we really want Damon Hill saying, oh, I'm going to drive the McLaren team because their cars are blue? This motion is nonsense.
Oh, it's so like a man, honestly. Honestly. It's just me, yeah. Isn't it?
Maria, as a hot-blooded woman, do you want your men to be more like women?
No, not at all. I say vive la différence. I mean, frankly, I think we need a bit of testosterone. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had half of the jokes we'd had tonight about Will Carling and the like. And also, I think, you know, women are very sensitive and caring and compassionate and humane. And men are bullish, unthinking, loutish.
Oh, well, you've gone on enough now, Maria.
And you know, frankly, if we didn't have men being like that, who would we feel superior to?
Anyway, moving on. Mark, do you have anything you wish to say on this subject?
I definitely do. I think, yes, I think we'd be able to understand the complexities and inner beauty of women and all they have to offer.
Point of order,
I'm sorry, I'm getting
Chairman.
Choked
Point
up.
Of order. Yes. I feel patronised by him now.
Oh, I thought he did really well, because it's really hard.
Thanks very much.
Would you like to role-play? Women do a lot of role-playing. Is that the sort of thing you'd be good at?
Yes, I would.
Understanding and communicating.
I'd be more than happy to dress up as a woman,
right.
And put on some lipstick. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to stop now.
No, for the people at home, I would like to inform them that this is how he's dressed at the moment.
Yes, well spotted. Finally, let's throw it open to the audience. Those who agree with the motion, this House believes that men should be more like women, say aye. And those who disagree with the motion that men should be more like women, say nay. And the winners, once again, are John and Maria. Mystery motions, don't you love them? This House would rather share a room with a German than American. Maria, would you please propose this motion?
Well, I would rather share a room with a German than an American because I can't speak German. Therefore, it would be quite quiet in my room. And also, I've always been very partial to a man in lederhosen with a large sausage. But I think, no, your room would probably be quite tidy as well, because Germans are quite tidy, generalising. And also, Americans quite loud, and they'd ask you if you knew their cousin Buck, who lived in London. And if I know. And that's all I'm going to say.
Thank you very much.
Brevity,
Maria, thank you very much. Mr. Mark Mayer, would you please take the lectern and oppose the motion? This House would rather share a room with a German than an American.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you were sharing a room with an American, you wouldn't have to do any talking because they'd do that all for you, obviously. And it should be quite handy when Jehovah's Witnesses came knocking at your door. Do you believe in Jesus? Oh, wow, for sure. Come in, let's talk. Sorry, wrong house. Americans, of course, have a wonderful language. Admittedly, it's ours, but... You go into the bathroom, they'd steal your towels, keep throwing them over the sofa. I was here first. And that's the other thing, you've been watching television, and you know, Americans, they've brought most of our sitcoms. Germans, with clearly no sense of humour, you have to explain everything to them. This is friends thing, so they are friends? Then why are they fighting? I oppose the motion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Markman. Okay, time for an audience vote. To those members of the audience who agree with Maria, this House would rather share a room with a German than an American, say aye.
Aye.
And who want to go with Mark and oppose the motion that Germans over Americans, say nay.
Nay.
The nays have it. A resounding victory for Miles and Mark. That's the end of the debating for tonight. It just remains for me to say thank you to all our speakers. To this week's debating Plum Duffs, Miles and Mark, and this week's Jam Fancies, John and Maria. Before we go, if you enjoyed half an hour of informed opinion, well-reasoned analysis and witty banter, then do drop us a line and let me know what it was you were listening to. Goodbye.
The Motion Show was presented by Dr. Phil Hammond. The speakers were Miles Kington, Maria McCurlane, Mark Mayer and John O'Farrell. It was devised by Bill Dare and the producer was Helen Williams.